All right, welcome back to Camp Time is Real Time. It's me, Sarah Labreck, your host. Hello. Big day today, guys. It's the first day of camp. Oh my gosh, it was so wonderful to be back, just to drop off Aiden and to be on the campgrounds. It was awesome. What a day. Oh, what a day. And it felt fitting to drop this podcast on this day. For a couple of reasons. One, because I got it finished. And two, because it was something I always felt like we had to do, but I just wasn't sure the right way to do it. And that is, we are talking about John Panciacco, our favorite counselor. And sadly, we lost John 3 years ago now. And he was just such a bright spot at camp that I realized no podcast about this camp could happen without him, without mention to him. And you've probably noticed that he comes up in just about every episode, or he did until maybe 10 episodes ago when I just started using the clips for the purpose of this show. So, a couple of things. If you were wondering that, like, why are we not talking about John anymore? It's because I was saving the clips. And here they are. But it's impossible not to talk about this place without him because he just spans such a broad generational span. I mean, he was there when I was a camper in the late 80s and early 90s. And then he came back. And like, just, if each generation is, 10 years roughly or so at camp, I mean, it's a lot of people who knew him and just have the best things to say about him. I'll say, because I'm in some of these clips, but my John Panciacco just kind of feeling is that he was a counselor that I recognized as like one of the larger than life ones when I was a camper. I was like, oh, like John Panciacco, yes, like he is in that upper echelon of like people who make camp what it is. Like I always, you know that as a camper, you can feel it. And then when he came back, there was this buzz around it. It was like, did you hear? Like, did you hear who's coming back? And it was so cool. And I didn't really know him as a camper, because I was quite young when he left and came back. And I'm like, all right. And this guy comes back. And I'm like, not only is he the coolest guy, he's nice. He's awesome. He gets camp. It's like he never left, knew exactly what to do, kind of embodied everything that we would hear Tom talk about at orientation. Just like he just was him. And it was just so great. And I can't remember. I think I worked 1 or 2 years with him. I can't remember how many years we overlapped, but what stuck out to me is that he treated us like he was like, yeah, like we're all head counselors here, or we're all just like, there was no hierarchy, there was no ego, and it was just so great. One of the things I do that he also did a lot, and I'm like coming to learn this from listening to all these stories, is when you're in sing. And I mean, you can just kind of dictate the way things go from the crowd, like almost more so than if you're leading a song. Like, you can give those people the biggest round of applause they've ever had. You can speed up the pace of sing. You can do, whatever you want. You can interact with people who are up there singing or doing whatever. And that was something I always noticed from him when I would come back to visit. And I don't know. I don't know if I got it from him or if it was something that just the camp, kind of made happen, but I thought that was cool. And the other thing that I'll just say is that after I had been gone for several years and I came back to visit and I saw him out in adventure, and I had like just recently gotten engaged and I was like, yeah, we're getting married. And he was like, could not have been kinder. Just, that's so wonderful. I'm so happy for you. Well, I mean, these are things that normal people say, I get it, but it just means something a little bit more when it's someone you really look up to and there's no strings attached to it. Just like, that's wonderful. That's great. Like, look at you, like, you know, moving on with your life. It's great. Now, have I moved on? Of course not. Here we are doing the podcast. So, you know, I just, it is one of those things that I don't even have a concrete story to tell really too much. Aside from the way that, the mark that he left, just the way that he made me feel and what he did at the camp. And, you know, it's just, I'm forever grateful that there is a person like that in my life. And I think that, you know, really helped to shape the camp. And, I'm so happy that, that everyone feels the same way and has, I'm so happy that actually everyone has a specific memory to share. Cause I think that's better. We're going to kick it off here. And if you hear any like feedback or buzzing in the background, that means it's a really good story. Don't worry about it. Do not call the engineers. They don't know what they're doing. So anyway, I want everyone to enjoy this episode. It's the first day of camp. How fitting. And we'll talk to you soon.
Hey there, it's Sam. Very excited to make it onto the pod. Camp Time is Real Time, JP Tribute Edition. Sarah, thank you so much for doing this, and very excited to get to share a couple of stories about John, and I got somebody very special here to help me kick it off.
Hello, it's Carrie, and if you've been listening to the pod, you know my adoration for John. And I will say that I think that he would get the biggest kick out of the fact that Sam and I had to research what a voice memo was. He definitely would have razzed me all summer about this because this would have been right up his lane. So I this is for you, John, our favorite guy ever. We love you so much, and I'm so happy to give a shout out today.
Thank you, Carrie. And you're right, he would have razzed us all summer long about that and many, many other things, right? Because as we all know, one of John's most special characteristics or traits was his just incredible sense of humor. He was so, so, so funny. And, you know, he had a lot of different ways of being funny. But I think the one that I think of the most often is when he would play something off with that very serious face, very droll, kind of that dry sense of humor. But whereas a lot of people play things off like that and they kind of keep it going for a long time, with John, I felt like he was always really happy to just break character and start laughing right away and let you in on the joke. But that was kind of like one of his go-to joke personas, I thought. It was just so, so funny. He was a really, really, really funny guy. And, you know, I got to know him when he was very young, and other people have mentioned this before about him, that he was pretty shy when he first came on board. I don't know how aware of that I was. I was probably only about 10 years old when he came on the staff in the mid-80s, probably around like 1986, as an assistant counselor. He was actually the assistant counselor of archery. And back in that day, fun little camp fact here for you, assistant counselors used to get assigned to one area for the entire summer. So he was just the archery assistant for 6 weeks. He may have done another job after that as an assistant. I can't remember, but he, you know, in short order became the head counselor of the archery area. And that's where I think, as he's approaching probably 18, 19, 20 years old, he started to really develop that John FCDC persona that we all love and remember about him. He certainly made a huge impression on me. I always really looked up to him. My memories of being a 14-year-old assistant counselor, and he's probably, you know, 19 or 20 as a head counselor, and I just was clinging on to every single word that he said. Always just so, so funny. He was also, as probably a lot of people know, he was one of Gail's favorites. Somebody had mentioned on one of the podcast episodes about how Todd Ferris was Gail's favorite, and might have even mentioned that John was too, but certainly I'd put those two in the same category as people who could do absolutely no wrong in the eyes of Gail, which is really something to not take lightly at all to reach that type of level with Gail. But he had it early on, and she just thought the world of him. His stage presence, another thing I was thinking about with John, he had an absolutely incredible way of bringing the audience in and keeping them wrapped on his every single word. And often it started with nothing. Really quickly, just share a cool story of when I was taking over the program director job. And as my father was kind of, you know, training me up and getting ready to pass on the reins, he gave me lots of great little nuggets of advice. And one of the things that he said that I just clutched onto right away is, you know, there's going to be moments, maybe it's a sing, maybe it's a camp competition or some type of activity where you get the whole camp together and you're going to need something. You know, maybe things are just kind of falling flat and you need a little bit of energy and you need to take things in a slightly different direction. And when those moments come, all you have to do is just look at John and he'll know and he'll just step right up and do something. And if you know John, I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about right there. And sure enough, in that year that I was program director, when John was still with us and was a head counselor of Adventure, it happened multiple times where I was like, oh, I'm a little stuck right here. I need something to happen. And I'd look over at John, and he'd just come up with something out of thin air. And he'd keep it going, and he'd have the whole camp, you know, listening in and joining him and laughing, and he could just take the camp in these awesome directions, literally starting with nothing. That sense of humor that I talked about, another area where it really popped up a lot is if he had to go up and sing and explain something. You know, a counselor gets in trouble, they got to go up and give their excuse. You know, everybody's got various levels of skill with that. John was the master. He never got in trouble for anything. He could go up and just spin a tale out of thin air and just walk away at the very end, go back to his seat. He was the master of that type of stuff. He's so good at it. So I wrote down two stories that I wanted to share that are just really awesome memories for me of John. One kind of just a personal memory of the two of us, and then one that the whole camp got to be there to see. So the first one goes back to when, it's probably like the summer of 06, I think, is when I came back after taking a little bit of a hiatus. And John had done the same thing, and I think he had been back for 1 year before that. So we're meeting back up now, both as a little bit older adults. He's already started his family, and we're, you know, doing this camp thing again, and very excited about it. And it was on orientation day, and we're at the stage of the tour where we've made it to the pool, one of the last steps before we go off to our different areas. And Kelly is, you know, going over all the rules of the pool, and I was off to the side with John, and I just kind of, you know, pulled him to the side, and I told him this quick story. And I won't share the details of the story right now. Number one, just for time's sake and not to bore people, but also because the story really isn't appropriate for Camp Time is Real Time. But it was just kind of this funny story I was relaying to him about something that had happened at that same point of the orientation back when I was a kid, probably when I was like 13 and I was going through my first orientation. And it was, it just really just got John. He got such a kick out of it. And part of the point of the story that I'm relaying to you now is that, you know, many people think of John as this very saintly character that could that would do no harm and never think a negative thought. And that's absolutely true. And that's a well-earned reputation that he has, because that's really who he is. Someone had mentioned once on the podcast, and I thought this was so apt, that John's sense of humor was the type where it was never, ever malicious. You know, there was nothing that he ever did. Even if he was poking fun at somebody, he was never looking to take anybody down. And that's a pretty awesome and rare quality in people, and absolutely true of John. But, you know, like everybody, he had a little bit of a devilish side, and I feel privileged to have gotten to have access to it from time to time. And this is one of those moments. So again, we're at the poolside at the orientation, and I relayed this story to him, and he just loved it. He got such a kick out of it. So I made a point to tell him the story again exactly 1 year later when we're by the pool at orientation. So year two, he laughs again, and I told it to him again in the third year, and so on and so forth, every single year. So this must have gone on for like 12 years. But what's so funny to me about it, what I love thinking back on it, is that you know, over time, it just kind of evolved. You know, the first time I told him the whole story, probably the second time too. And, you know, by the third or fourth year, I would just kind of tell him the punchline to the story. And he'd still laugh just as hard as the first time. And by the very end, in the last years, I didn't say anything to him. I might actually make a point when we entered the pool at orientation to stand far away from him. And then at some point, I would just make eye contact with him and he'd just turn around and start chuckling to himself. And it was just this fun little moment that we had. It was just kind of this boyish humor based on this long ago story from the 1990s. But it was always this just fun, special moment that I had with him. And just, again, kind of illustrated that even though he really was this incredible saint of a person, he had another side to his humor, too, that I love to enjoy with him. So that was my first story. And my second one, if you were here in 2018 at camp, you got to see this. It's the epic John Panciacco belly flop at the belly flop competition at the end of the year. So it was my first year as program director. John was the adventure and Cheyenne counselor at the time. And I had approached him, you know, and said, hey, you know, what do you think about being the belly flop? He said, oh, of course, absolutely. Like, he would respond to anything. And he ended up having fifth activity free that day, which was the last thing before we met at the pool for belly flop. So during fifth activity, I walked around the camp and noticed that he was just sitting in the gazebo all by himself. And I passed him two or three times, and I didn't interrupt him or say anything, but he's just sitting there like almost in a meditative state in the gazebo. Now the bell rings, he goes to the pool, we have the competition, and again, if you were there, you saw it. If you weren't, it wouldn't surprise you, but his belly flop was absolutely epic. It was perfect, you know, full belly flop sound effect, perfect entry, spread eagle, you know, chest and belly makes the contact, it's all red afterwards, he's getting the biggest round of applause ever. And we got this incredible photograph of it too. I think maybe Sue took it. We posted it on the bulletin board afterwards, but it's just it's the moment before he hits the water, and you can see he's going to hit it perfectly. So after the competition's over, I was talking to him, like, John, what was going on with that time in the gazebo beforehand? And perfect earnest, he says to me, I needed the time to get into the right frame of mind. I had to visualize the belly flop before it happened. And this time, he didn't break character and smile. He was very serious about this. And I didn't doubt him for a second. He took that full 30-minute activity to go be by himself and visualize the belly flop before it actually happened. So in the years following that, 2019 was the next year, and I believe that year I had Caitlin in the belly flop competition, and she did awesome. And then 2021, Elizabeth was in the competition. She did a great job, and you can see where this is going. 2022, Mary is going to have to complete the circuit and participate in belly flop and live up to her father's incredible performance. But when I put Caitlin and Elizabeth in it, I made a point to tell them that story and say, you know, if you need to take some time to get yourself in the right frame of mind, get in that zen state before belly flop, you go for it. Anyhow, thank you for listening to those stories. Love John so much. You know, we miss him so dearly at camp, and I think there's a lot of people that know what he brought, and we've all tried in our own ways to fill in those holes that he left, and we'll never be able to do it right. You know, there's no replicating what John did, but we try our best. We want to continue a lot of the great traditions that he brought to camp, and never, ever, ever forget, you know, what he was and what he meant to all of us there at camp. John, miss you, buddy. Love you so much. Wish you were still here with us. And I love that all three of your daughters are still there carrying on the incredible Panciacco legacy that we think about all the time. All right, miss you and love you.
Here's Liz Fernandez.
I do, and I actually think I was one of his first tribes when he came back. And
so cool.
It was so cool because I remember you knew right away that he was someone special, and you felt special because of that. And he was also the explorer's head counselor. And so it's like you're in that final year as the oldest camper, and then you have him. And what I remember about him, like one of the memories that sticks out, is we were getting ready for our Friday cookout skit. And there was this theme, and we had all started getting really excited about what we could do. And he was like, "Hey guys, look, like, if you want to be CITs next year, you're going to need to start taking these things on and doing them on your own." He was like, "You guys figure this one out. Like, you do the skit." And I remember feeling, you know, that saved him a lot of time.
Nice move, Pantiaco.
But B, we felt so special and like so old. And when Carrie said, you know, powerful was one of the things that John used to say all the time, I got chills because I remember him saying that. And I think I remember like putting on the skit for him in a dry run and him being like, "You guys, that was powerful." And us just being like beaming, like, "We got John's approval." And but yeah, it was just one of those tangible moments of really feeling like someone's putting trust in us, giving us this responsibility, treating us like we're older. And I think he just had that ability to bring that out in people. And that's one of the things that I remember about him.
Here's Bree Lynn.
So John Pantiaco, one of my first memories of him is pretty specific, actually, because I was his first assistant when he returned back to camp in around 2004, 2003, somewhere in there. I remember because I had just gotten my license that spring, and I was driving to camp by myself, which was always so exciting. And at the orientation, we were talking about cookouts. And I don't think they did cookouts when John was originally a counselor, or it was done very differently, because he was just like, "I don't know what to do. What do I do with this? What do we do for cookouts? I don't know how to do a cookout." And I was, of course, very eager to get in on the secrets of the cookout prep. So I, you know, volunteered. I was like, "John, I have a car. I can go to Market Basket. I can do the whole cookout. Don't worry about the cookout. I got this." So so I did, I don't know what I made. We made like tacos or something. But I remember he was so happy that I was willing to do the cookout as an assistant. And confession, I think that I got him into that habit because I think after me, every assistant that John had had to do the bulk of the cookout. So I'm sorry to anyone who had to do that. It, totally my fault. But yeah, we were, I always remember we were, you know, the oldest group. So John was chronically late in the mornings, because he had to bring all the girls, and he would always run up behind the music shed to try not to be seen coming in late. And there were a lot of times where he got caught, and I just remember him having to go up at sing and coming up with the most elaborate, absolutely hilarious excuses for why he was late. And I would be back there with, you know, Sue Rice and Kelly, and we would just be sobbing, laughing so hard. He was so creative and funny. He's so genuinely funny, and I appreciate that so much about him. He was always, I had a reputation of being the girl that didn't smile, and it was so nice to be around him because he was so jolly. Just a jolly, jolly man. Yeah, miss him very much.
Here's Fink with three stories.
I was in Adventure. I was with John, and the song of the summer that year was "Shut Up and Dance with Me." I don't remember what year that was.
Nice,
but and John kind of got sick of hearing that song, and he said, like, you know, that's not a very nice thing to say to someone, like. Like, what if I went home and I told my wife, "Shut up and go make me a sandwich"? She wouldn't be too happy about that. Yeah. So that's hilarious.
I was thinking.
James Mulaney and Angela Longo, they're in my heads. And James wanted me to go to his car for something. Okay. I don't remember what I had to get. And at that age, and even now, I don't know cars very well. So I went down to like the counselor parking lot. I was like, oh geez, I don't know what James's car is. And just so happened, John was there. And I was like, John, do you know James's car? And he was like, yeah, sure, here it is. This is it. And I was like, oh, thank you so much, John. And because that was a very stressful moment of like, I don't know, I have to get whatever James wanted me to get, but I don't know what car it is. So he helped me with that. And then one of my last interactions with John, it was the last day of camp, and it's like the final free swim. And I'm at the pool and I'm talking with Nate Wachowicz, and John comes up to us and he says, "Thank you, Nate. Oh, it's so good to see you guys. Oh, it's you two are like the most creative people at camp." And I was like, "Oh, that's so nice, John. It was so nice to hear." And I was also like, "Oh, Ty's here too."
Yeah, yeah. What's going on there?
One from Bill Danner.
He was the archery counselor,
right,
at the time that I was a camper. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you remember, Todd. You probably remember. There was a time where one week of the session, one session, you would pull back all the way to the top of the hill, and you would fire the arrows up in the air, and they would land like a distance shot. You remember that? Either of you?
I don't.
No. So you'd be up where like, I don't know if games. So you were up almost near
what?
Flag. Yeah, okay. You were up almost near flag, and you would aim up, and then you would and basically you were challenging the rest of your tribe who could shoot the furthest.
Okay.
Yeah, and so we were doing that one time, and do you guys remember the old man that used to take care of the grounds there? His name was Ray.
Yes, I remember him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Someone had not informed Ray that this was going on. And so John has us all at the top of the hill, aiming for the sky. And all of a sudden, here that guy comes on the tractor. And now we're firing arrows at him, you know? And I remember John just went, "Stop, stop," comes flying over.
See fire.
Oh, he was freaking out. And, you know, I never forgot it. No, and no arrow even went near Ray. But it could have.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's
great.
I do not remember that at all.
It was just the older counts, the older campers, you know?
Did Gail know? Seems dangerous.
Oh, yeah. I did this more than once. This went on summer after summer. There was just the one day where we were distance shooting.
Scott Sorensen with three stories.
The first story I want to share about John is from when I was his assistant out in adventure. And John was going through the rules with a group of campers, kind of on the younger end. I forget exactly which tribe, but some of the younger kids. John's going through the rules, and I don't know, one of them, he says something along the lines of like, "Oh, and you know, we don't want anyone climbing on the trees. You know, you should be paying attention to the counselors. Into the activity." And he kind of keeps going on for a little bit. A few minutes later, sure enough, there's a young boy starting to kind of just climb one of the trees, not paying attention. John looks at him and goes, "Excuse me, young man, why are you doing that?" And the little boy looks up at John and goes, "I don't know." And John very calmly just says, "All right, well, you know, no more climbing trees. Like, it's time to pay attention. Got to listen to the rest of the rules." And he continues on. A few minutes later, he kind of whispers to me on the side. He goes, "You know, Scott, when that little boy said, 'I don't know,' that's a perfectly legitimate answer because the frontal lobe of their brain isn't fully developed until later in life." And of course, I got a little laugh at that at the time because, like, oh, that's kind of a silly thing. Ha ha ha. But his kind of bigger point was, you know, don't get frustrated with the little kids because sometimes they do stuff that, you know, they honestly just don't know why they did it because it's not really their fault. So that was kind of an insight to his knowledge and understanding of young children. And I think that definitely played into why he was such a great counselor. Next thing I want to share about John, it happened at Afternoon Flag. You know, it's kind of a relaxing time of day. You know, the kids know what they're doing. They just got to grab their bags, get to post, hang out, wait for Tom to show up to get us going. There's, you know, just a few minutes of kind of just downtime. So John and I were just kind of soaking up the sun, keeping an eye on our tribe. He's got a big smile on his face, and he says, "Ah, if only I could do this job all year round, make about 80K. Yeah, that'd be great." So I got a laugh out of that one as well. But to tell, you know, kind of an inside secret, I firmly believe that John would have done that job for half that price and still been just as happy and just as thrilled to be there if he could have had that for his full-time profession. Another good Afternoon Flag story. John and I were hanging out, and he was telling me about a time when he had recently gone golfing with some of his friends. And one of his friends offered the group of guys there some chewing tobacco. Now, bear with me, listeners. So John and his friends say, "Yeah, sure, I'll give it a try." Don't think he ever had in the past. But yeah, I mean, out having a nice day of golf with some friends. Well, let's give it a try. So he tried it, and his description of it was, he said, "Oh, whoa, I feel dizzy. I better never do this again, or else I'll be addicted." And again, I got a good little laugh out of that. Now, he was telling this to me as, you know, I was either junior, senior in high school, maybe as a freshman in college, so I was 18, 19 years old. I think he was telling it to me as more of kind of a lesson of, you know, maybe it's okay to try things, even if they're maybe frowned upon. But the important part is to recognize your own self-limits, maybe recognize your own strengths or weaknesses, and having that self-awareness is a very valuable thing as you're becoming a young adult. So even though it's kind of like, "Oh, John, you shouldn't be doing any tobacco products." That's true. But I think his point of, you know, him recognizing, "Oh, this is something I shouldn't ever do again," because it will kind of maybe lead to not an ideal situation. I thought that was a very valuable takeaway. Especially kind of being a young adult myself at the time. And that kind of helped me make wise decisions going forward in my life. Maybe not necessarily avoiding every single thing that may or may not be a great idea, but definitely recognizing in myself my own limitations and being able to make responsible decisions based on that.
Here's Colby.
There's so many great things that you can say about John, but I think what really comes to mind for me and what was like what I noticed most about him was just like how knowledgeable and caring he was about just anybody. I mean, and I remember when I went as a Cherokee and I came back home and I told my mom, "Oh, like there's this funny counselor named John Panciacco," and she went to Medfield. So she recognized the name Panciacco and she goes, "Oh my gosh, John Panciacco." I think she didn't graduate with him, but she was like a few years younger. And I think one of his brothers was in her grade. And so she didn't really know him at all. And I remember going up to John as a 10-year-old camper and being like, "Do you remember my mom?" And he goes, and his face lit up and goes, "Oh my gosh, she was the soccer player, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." Like, and like, just like the fact like he'd remember something like that is just so like, it just like speaks a lot about him, like, because it really shows that when people enter his life that like he values it, you know. And I think that's just something so special, and not stuff that you find in every human, and it's something you really have to be grateful for too.
Turtle.
He was my counselor. He was my counselor when I was a Cheyenne. Yes. Which was absolutely incredible. That was the dream, was to have John P as your counselor. Nice. And I knew that from my first week there.
Nice.
As a kid, I knew that was the ultimate goal. Mm-hmm. So having him was incredible. I was a CIT. I was his assistant at one point. He's just the most incredible human being that I think I've ever met. And I actually looked at him as a real mentor in my life, and especially during my time at camp, if I could be half of what John P was as a counselor, then I've done my job. And that was always my goal, was looking at John and being how to get people to love you like they love John. He was the best. I remember, I love the way he would just talk to campers as if they were full grown adults. You're little kids, they're doing something wrong, getting on the whale watch, and you just be so direct with them. No, that's not how we do it. Yeah. Just the way he treated literally everyone as equal. Yes, he was hilarious the way he went about things, but the amount of respect he had for a tenderfoot telling a story, mm-hmm. all the way up to you as a counselor, was amazing. And that's probably the thing I remember most about him. It's just how fantastic and amazing of a person he is. He was my so he obviously worked at Medfield High School. Mm-hmm. My brothers are from Medfield. And when I remember one year I was probably a CIT or an assistant. It was a rainy day, and I had a Medfield baseball jacket. Mm-hmm. And he came up to me, it's kind of always probably the secret thing in my mind, I want John P to see me in a Medfield baseball jacket. And he did, and it totally backfired. He's like, "Where'd you get that jacket?" And I was my brother, Jeff Cohen. He's like, "Yeah, I know Jeff, he's a student at Medfield." He's like, "Yeah, he was supposed to return that jacket at the end of the year."
Oh no.
And he said something like, "No wonder why my budget got cut," or something like that. And I was like,
oh no.
I still don't know if he was joking or not.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, it's that deadpan, and you're just wait.
That was one of my favorite moments of John, is on a personal note, but just literally the quintessential greatest person I think I've ever met, especially at camp, if not anywhere.
Here's Todd Ferris.
All of the stories I think he was the original one to get, because he was always barefoot.
Yes.
Right. Never knew him to not be barefoot, but he always got out of it with the the defenses of having someone else write the letter or whatever, some of his, because he had the best sense of humor, and they were truly entertaining. It was great stuff.
John was the first one to write letters to Tom at Sing. Remember the anonymous letter would show up and it would say, "This is why I was late. I stopped by a nursing home that was on fire." And John was the first one to do that. That has traveled on since then.
Oh yeah.
He started.
Oh, I love that too, because Tom would start reading it and you'd see Tom just go, "Yep, he's gonna get out of this." He knew when it was over, and he's like, "All right, we'll go ahead and read the rest of this, but you can sit down." Here are the Giddings kids, Josh, Trisha, and Rachel, with some John memories.
When John would get in trouble, and trust me, he was especially with the girls, they'll tell you, he would show up at 9:15, as a head counselor. And it's sorry. And he's running in with three girls, two of them he's carrying, and Caitlin is literally running behind him with the backpack that's bigger than her. Right. He's like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Got a late start this morning." Right.
Yeah.
And he would always find a way to get out of it. He has never done any punishment.
Yeah.
And I guess that was his punishment, right? Was like, all right, instead of doing dead ants, I guess you can come up and do a 5-minute story of like how you saved the day from, you know, mass extinction, or like, a, right. you know, atom bomb from the cat came back or whatever, you know?
Yep. Just narrowly avoided it. Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah. I remember mom being like, I need to get John in trouble just to hear the excuse.
Just to hear the excuse. Yeah. Like,
that was the goal.
Like, that was it.
Well, first of all of us were Cheyennes. He always had one kid that summer, his designated coffee getter. So that was definitely, I was it. I'm sure you guys both were as well.
Nice.
Classic. Yeah, so I play hockey. He's a hockey guy. He loved that. And I was in his tribe 1 year, and I'm a goalie, so he loved that even more. And I just remember that whole summer, it's him in the middle of talking random things. He's grabbing a pine cone. He yells slap shot, and I, like, he hits me purposely, and, like, he'd be like, oh, my God, she saved it. And I don't know. That was just something that I obviously loved because, you know, I played hockey. He played hockey. I, like, loved him for it. So
I think one thing that John was known for was CIT tryouts with all of his campers. The CIT's late to lunch with your lunch bags. And he'd be like, CIT tryouts, let's go. Like, who's going to go get the lunch bags with them? Nice. Or
not enough people.
Yeah, the whole coffee thing. If he's standing there with his hand like this, he needs his coffee. And that was like, you're part of CIT tryouts was you're the coffee, you're his coffee person. And if you're standing here, he'd be standing there like this, you failed. He didn't get his coffee that morning. but it was stuff like that. Like if you were, he always had the better behaved tribe out of the older two. And I think it's because everyone always idolized him and the CIT tryouts. Like I don't know if anyone ever really thought it was real, but they were like, oh, I impressed John and I come back.
Yeah.
So he'd make anything into a competition just randomly.
My favorites were like at like skits and no one's clapping. And then John whispers CIT tryouts. And then the Cheyennes are all like, yeah,
that's awesome.
So like, yeah. Or like there's a few minutes left in sing and no one wants to do anything. And he's like CIT tryouts. And your entire tribe gets up and goes to do something.
I don't know how to say it. But yeah, like just, yeah, he was incredible.
Yeah.
Probably
yeah.
one of my favorite head counselors.
Oh yeah,
for sure.
Definitely. He was the one, when you say that everyone was excited to have our dad, everyone was excited to have John. Like you get John, you've made it.
Like,
he'd give his entire tribe nicknames too. I remember I was Gitmo and I was like, what? I danced in the, like when I was young. So I never played like a high school sport where you got the nickname. Mm-hmm. And so I was Gitmo and I was like sick. And there was 1 year, our skit was like, Miracle. We were supposed to be doing the Miracle on Ice movie.
Yep. Yeah.
And he did the whole speech from Miracle on Ice for the announcement or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we all made shirts and they were supposed to be jerseys and they all had a number on the back and then our nickname on the back because he gave every single person a nickname. It was like going up to Cheyenne, I was Trish Alicia the entire time. And then once I was a Cheyenne, everyone else got a nickname and I got a new nickname.
Here's Fred Berger.
Hello, everyone. Freddie Beckman. And I had John Panciaco when I was a Cheyenne in 2012 during the 40th year of FCDC. And the story I'm going to tell about him wasn't when I was a camper, but when I was a second year CIT. This is a great story, and it's really what I think like developed me, made me think of the ways how I can be a good counselor and head counselor moving forward. And so I was the arts and crafts counselor, and his tribe, the Cheyennes, were in arts and crafts that day, writing a little lineup for their kickball tournament later that day, and they were putting like all the guys up front and all the females in the back just because they thought it was better, it was going to hit farther, it was going to be stacked up, and I just thinking to myself, like, this is not how tribe should be a camp, everyone should be intermingled, having fun, like some of the girls were crying, so I just went up to John and I told him what was going on, and I remember him standing in front of his tribe in the gazebo, I think it was a Wednesday, because it was some wacky Wednesday, something like that, and he was just giving his tribe like a speech about what camp was all about, like it's okay to be different, like he was saying is a 40-year-old man. He's wearing pipettes in his hair. He can paint his fingernails, wear face paint, do whatever he wants. This is camp. It's okay to be different. And as a tribe, you all need to be together. You guys are the oldest tribe on this camp. You need to be role models for junior camp and going to be CITs next year. And just everyone needs to be treated equal. And everyone, it's okay to be who you are. It's especially the time we're living. You just push that. It's okay to be who you are. Camp brings out the best in everyone. It's all different types of people, different walks of life coming together and really enjoying this camp. I just took that forward with me to my CIT days, now my head counselor days, of everyone is different. You know, no one, two people are alike, and people's personalities will clash, some will be together, but camp is definitely this unique place where you can be who you want to be, and it doesn't matter because you're going to find a place here, you're going to shine, and everyone's going to love you. And I just thought, like, seeing that as such, like, a young 14-year-old from a 40-year-old is just so cool to hear that story. Now I think about it when I'm head counselor, just, yeah, it's perfect to be different, you know? Everyone's different. But yeah, that's my John Panciaco story.
And Katie Sorensen.
One thing that really sticks with me about John was his ability to point out the sheer absurdity that comes with working with children. I remember one time, right after the oatmeal competition, he was walking by, you know, heading to maybe jump in the pond or, you know, hose himself off. He's covered head to toe in oatmeal. And he just goes, "I went to college for 6 years." And I just remember howling laughing at that. There was another time we were backstage at the theater ready to put on a skit, and I'm trying to zipper him into a dress, and it's kind of a struggle. And again, he just comes out with, "I have a master's degree." And I remember just laughing so much at these comments that he would make about how silly these situations were. And I often think about those things when I'm teaching and when the kids are acting like hot messes and there's glitter and glue everywhere and it's just total chaos and everything's on fire. I just imagine John watching and going, "You have a master's degree," or "You went to college for 6 years to do this." And it just makes me smile every time. And it makes the situation that I'm in a little less stressful.
Perhaps you're all familiar with Tom Cowell. Here's a story about John from Tom.
My connection to John and his connection to FCDC starts in the mid-1970s. He was a student of mine in elementary school in Medfield and was friendly to the other kids and enthusiastic right from the first time I ever had him in class. Then on to high school, I had him again, and I found the same. Always enthusiastic, always happy. I think he got it a lot from his dad. His dad was an elementary school principal and had that same smile and that same glow about him. I brought him to camp because of I liked him, first of all, his sophomore year in high school, and I found out he could play the trumpet, and we needed a new taps guy at camp. And back in the day, one person used to play taps all summer long. So he was a great addition from the get-go, even being a young guy. He went on with us through college, and then after college, he headed out to Central New York with Krista, starting their careers. And then in a short amount of years, he was back with us. I've got lots of stories for another day. But I want to mention one thing. He was the master of filling moments. Just a look from me, and he could read what I needed at that time, anywhere at camp, any time of the day, under any weather conditions. There would be a pause, it'd sing, or it'd flag, or wherever it was, and I'd look over at John, and he'd read, and he would contribute to whatever was happening and get people excited and going. The powerful, that started years ago at camp, and of course it endures till today. His enduring legacy is four beautiful ladies on Knollwood Drive in Medfield, and three of them continue to carry on with us at camp. Thanks.
Here's a great story from Susan Cowell.
I've known John since he was in high school. He was a student of mine for 3 years. He was so kind and polite as a student, just really well-mannered. And I had all four of the Panciaco boys, and they were all in their own ways, all so special, and I enjoyed all of them. Krista was also my student, and she too was just always so thoughtful and courteous, and her mom worked with us at school, so that made her even more special to us. But we've known John a long time, obviously. It was really fun for me when he was hired at Medfield High School. We'd see each other just about every day, and nearly every conversation was about camp. We'd see each other, you know, coming down the hall, and from way down the hall, you know, the kids would all be gone and in the classrooms, and John and I would be going somewhere between periods, you know, during periods when the halls were empty, and we could see each other way down the hall. And when we'd meet, you know, it was like, finally, someone who understands me, right? We both knew about this whole other world, and everybody at camp knows, like, no one else understands, but it was so great having that moment with John pretty much every day to share just that common understanding. Usually our conversations were really quick, and they were things I'm sure he'd already said with the girls earlier that day, or that the girls probably thought of and said to him, like, if we were on the second half of the school year, his comment would be something like, we're closer than we are further, you know, or only 78 days till camp, or sarcastically, sometimes we'd be in a meeting and we'd kind of catch each other's eyes and give the, like, hey, this is just like camp, isn't it? You know, sarcasm. Like a lot of people, John really came alive at camp. He was free to be his true self and let all the crazy out. And school had too many rules and stiff shirts, right? It was seeing John throughout the year was kind of this reminder of the brightness to come, you know, in the summer. It was also a real treat for me to have Caitlin, Elizabeth, and Mary as students. They all carry their parents' qualities, and yet they have their own special, distinct personalities as well, and that's really cool. A really neat thing that happened at school 7 years ago, a group of teachers created this Humanitas Award, and it was to be given to a senior at graduation, and the award was designed to recognize students who demonstrated kindness, inclusion, citizenship. And it says so much to me that in 2020, the award was renamed the John Panciaco Humanitas Award. And that was an honor to, you know, honor and remember John's kind and welcoming spirit. And I can't help but think that so much of that was kindled here at camp. And I'm so happy that other people at school saw what we see. And that was really awesome. Thanks.
And one more story from a Cowell. Here's Michael.
In my opinion, John is easily one of the top five most recognizable personalities in all of FCDC history. He was present for many different eras of camp, and he raised and influenced an entire generation of campers, many of which later became counselors and his co-workers, which is so cool. I wasn't fortunate enough to have John as my head counselor when I was a camper, but it really didn't matter because he was such a force and a presence at FLAG and at Sing and during competitions. And so as a camper, even after the first week of camp, you felt like you knew John so well, it was like you'd already spent 6 weeks in his tribe. So in thinking about John and what made him so special, there are certain qualities that always seem to set him apart from other counselors when I think about him. And, you know, you compare the most boring FCDC counselor to the coolest non-camp adult, and it's a pretty tough competition. So to stand out from FCDC counselors is pretty spectacular. But the things I think made John stand out, two main things, his skill for improvisation and his unique style of delivery. So first, to summarize the improvisation talent, whether it was an announcement at Morning Flag or when he was called upon to fill some dead air during Sing, it was like in milliseconds, John would very matter-of-factly make a hilarious observation or quote a famous philosopher or politician in order to resolve some conflict or answer a question. And my favorite of these moments was back sometime in the 2000s. There was a competition, I think it might have been ice cream eating or something like that, and for some reason, at the end of the competition, the winning team was left ambiguous and no winner was declared. I wish I could remember the reason for that, but it must have just been a tie and no one really knew how to call it. So the fact that there was no winner was obviously very confusing to the camp and a bit upsetting. And at some point, John was publicly asked for his opinion on the matter, on which team he thought had won the competition. And John said, "Well, it depends on what your definition of is, is." So in terms of John's unique style of delivery, which is his other characteristic I usually think about, I don't really know how to describe it. I suppose I would describe it as Shakespearean. And so rather than try to explain it in any greater depth than that, maybe it would be more fun to hear an example. So for your listening pleasure, here is a standard morning announcement that might be made during Flag, and it will be read twice. First spoken in the style of a one-and-done head counselor, and then afterwards spoken in John's style of delivery. So here's the one-and-done version. "Today, the Cheyennes are going to be doing a skit about chipmunks." And now here's John's version. And I'm going to set the scene real quick. Tom's hand is tracing a path around the circle. He points to John and says, "John, what do you got?" John takes several steps forward, with both of his hands raised to the sky, and he leaves a moment of dramatic silence. Then he begins. "Friends, esteemed colleagues, campers, Gale, today marks the first day of a new chapter in FCDC history. This afternoon at the theater, the Cheyenne Drama Squad will be performing something that can only be described as pure art. You think you know chipmunks? Well, think again, bub. Prepare yourself for laughter, for tears, but most of all, applause. For this afternoon, the Cheyennes will be making rodent history. Thank you." And one last thing. Even though John's sense of humor might be what he's best known for publicly, anyone who's worked directly with John, either at camp or at school, in his career as a teacher and a coach, anyone can tell you that John's primary motivation has always been making kids feel safe and feel seen and cared for. And this was apparent working with John as a counselor. But I also worked in the same school as John for many years, and it was clear from his interactions with his students that they felt like they could speak openly and authentically with him without fear of being judged, which is a really great thing to have as a teenager. That's rare. And John was appreciated also by the faculty, who loved him not only for his sincere kindness, but also for his very funny emails, which always sounded a lot like his morning announcements at camp. It always started with, "Colleagues!" So pretty much the same thing. In fact, speaking of John at school, there's actually an award given out at John's school at the end of each year, and it's given to a senior who exemplifies integrity of character. So, for example, the award would go to a student who reaches out to marginalized kids who are usually ignored, or to someone who stands up for kids who are bullied, or for a student who invites the lone kid to join their group and generally makes everyone feel welcome in the classroom. So anyways, after John's passing, this award was renamed in his honor, which I think says everything you need to know about John and the mark that he left on other people. So that's very touching, but I doubt John would want me to end this on a somber note, so I'll wrap up here with my favorite John Panciacco moment of all time. And this was many years ago, sometime in the 2010s. John was participating in the spaghetti eating competition, and as you'd expect, John had put 100% of his effort into the competition, and he was a clear contender. Like, he was possibly going to come in first or second place, and we were just waiting on the judges to call it. And after the judges had seen all of the plates, they pointed to John as having came in first place, and he practically leapt up out of his seat with spaghetti sauce smeared all over his face and his shirt, and with spaghetti still in his mouth, he shouted,
I have a master's degree.
John Panciacco owes me $20, and frankly, I'm still waiting for it. We made a bet in 2017 about whether I could convince the Cheyennes to lip sync to like Whitney Houston or someone, which is obviously which obviously he knew I could because literally that's what I do. But John taught me that you can always come back to camp, that it's there waiting for you if you're at a low, it's there to help you get high again. Sometimes he would come into the bakery and he would sneak behind me and he would sneak and say, I love your work. I want to see more. He would always say that. I love your work. I want to see more. And it always made me feel so, I always wanted to do it for him, you know? He snuck one last one to me right before he went. I think about it like all the time. The real bet that we made was whether we could spend the rest of our lives at camp. And I guess, actually, I owe him $20. So I guess, John, I guess we're even now. I love you.